You're listening to Ali Moore on ABC Radio Melbourne.
You would have seen the footage of the anti-lockdown protest over the weekend. It became a series of running clashes with police who used new anti-riot measures, and that included pepper spray pellets to try to control the crowd. What did you think? Were you there? 1300 222 774. Police have described it as probably the most violent protest we've seen in nearly 20 years. Well, Shane Patton is the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police. Shane Patton, good morning.
Morning, Ali.
That's a big call, isn't it? The most violent protest, probably, that we've seen in nearly 20 years.
Yeah, well, described as one of the most violent protests we've seen in 20 years, and that came from experienced officers on the ground who are regularly engaged in these type of protests. Such was the anger and the violence that we saw.
How many were genuine anti-lockdown protesters, and who are the others?
Well, what is a genuine anti-lockdown protester? I asked that question, but
it's a fair question to ask.
Yeah. It was a mixture of a range of different people. We even have intelligence that some of them were right-wing extremists involved in there as well. You had a whole range of different people, as I described on the weekend in a press conference. A vast majority, it appeared to be between 25 and 40-year-old angry men. That's what it was, but it was a mixture of a range of people with no clear leadership. Just many people came in with an intention to confront police and with anger and confrontation on their mind, and that's what occurred.
And is that one of the issues, that because there was no clear leadership, I mean, it became this sort of running battle where with different hotspots, didn't it?
The issue was that these people came prepared. We had marbles thrown at us, stubbies thrown at us, flares thrown at police officers. Two members were struck with a flare and received minor burns. There were a range of things thrown, bottles of water. It was a disgrace what occurred, and we can't allow it to occur again.
Was it the first time that you've used that new riot equipment, the rifles that fire pepper spray pellets?
It was the first time we've used them in a formal protest activity arena, yes. But it was required. I mean, I completely support the tactical decision that was made to do that. It was necessary to de-escalate the manner of the violent behaviour that was occurring and to protect the safety of not only the police involved, but many of the others in the crowd.
What else was used? Because there are also reports of hard squash-sized balls.
We used what is a 40-millimetre batten round, but it's like a mini squash ball, if you like, and it's deployed. It's a projectile like a squash ball, and it's deployed to aim at specific people who are the key people who are confronting and placing threats to numerous people in the crowd and police.
And what sort of damage or impact can that ball have?
Oh, well, they'll just get bruises from that. We've had all of these weapons since 2018. We never wanted to have to use them. We have had to use them on the weekend. Such was the violence that was projected at us through some of these protesters. But when we did it, we did human rights assessments and engaged with a whole range of community groups. We haven't hidden the fact we've had these weapons. That's well known.
To what extent, though, does the police presence, which obviously has to be there, but the anti-riot equipment aggravate the situation? I mean, what would happen if police lined the streets but took a step back, didn't push the protesters back, didn't engage? Is that even an option?
Oh, yeah, look, we make many tactical decisions on the day and numerous other protests as well. And on the day, this wasn't where we've gone and said, let's confront you and engage. That wasn't the intention at all. But we have tried to make sure that we've not allowed them to form up as a huge group. That's part of the tactics.
And why? What would that mean? I mean, in a virtually empty city, if it was a huge group walking through the streets,
because as when they become en masse a huger group, then it's more difficult to control them. They can then damage infrastructure. You've got huge increase in risks of spread. Violence is much more difficult to control. So for those reasons, we tried to keep them separated. But we weren't about confrontation. This confrontation was brought on by the protesters, and we had to deal with it.
And you said earlier you can't let it happen again. So how do you stop it? And reports this morning suggest that you are considering things like shutting down public transport. Is that one approach?
Yeah, we'll be doing everything to stop this type of violence occurring again. I can never give that guarantee, but that's what I'll be trying to do, to stop this occurring again. And part of that, we'll be having discussions to determine whether, when we know we've got a very large protest occurring or a potentially large protest, that we do say, okay, well, it's going to be a huge inconvenience to the community, but rather than having everyone coming here and potentially spreading the virus, rather than having everyone coming here and being confrontational and being violent, let's consider shutting down the transport network, let's consider blocking the roads, stopping Ubers. We'll consider those options and see how feasible it is, but it's something that we'll seriously consider.
And I know that we've seen that in New South Wales, haven't we? We've seen, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of cars stopped entering the CBD.
Yes, yes, that did occur in New South Wales, and we did consider that during the week as well, but subject to what was believed to be the case, I mean, we didn't know that we're going to get 4,000 people in here and that they're going to be, with a vast majority of them being violent. So it's a matter of trying to balance up the intelligence we have and take that approach. But we certainly considered and spoke about the transport option. We didn't invoke that because we are mindful of inconvenience to other people, but now we'll step through and see whether that's really feasible, because as I said, I do not want this to occur again.
And the police officers who were injured, how are they?
Well, we're now up to 21 police officers who have sustained injuries. We got some more reported yesterday that you'd call sort of more to the minor end. Of the 9 that were treated at hospital, 8 were discharged, 1 still in there and being assessed as to whether he requires further treatment on an ankle or leg injury. So, but by and large, I'm told they're visited by senior, spoken to by senior officers, and in reasonably good spirits when you take into account what they're exposed and subjected to on that day.
Shane Patton, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, Ellie.